Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. You know, today is International Women's Day, and I have the honor and privilege to interview some powerful women today. What an amazing way to honor and celebrate the women that have made the business world what it is today. And part of that is who I am sitting with and having the privilege of interviewing, Monique Davis. Monique, give us a little bit of a background on yourself. Whenever we first interacted, as I mentioned before we hit record, I love that you are a female founder of not one, but two companies. And I think that there's a lot of insight that you're going to bring to not only the average listener, but the female listener that is tuning into today's episode. So thank you for joining us. Please let us know a little bit about yourself.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Angela. I'm excited. I'm excited to be here with Ivy Podcast.
Yes.
And just appreciate, you know, just you and making this such a really comfortable conversation from the start. So thank you for that. You know, as far as a little bit about me, it's so weird when I think about my journey in general, leading on here into where we are now in recruiting and training. But I guess it started with me just knowing that I had a desire to do something special, to do something different. I didn't know what that was. So I was the epitome of a job hopper. Okay. And listen, I always tell people, if you want to know the next entrepreneur, look at the person who's hopping, because they're trying to fulfill something and they just don't quite know what it is. Right. And so, yeah. And so initially I started off actually in the entertainment business, casting and doing modeling casting and modeling training. But I was always identifying the right fit. It was secretly sneaking up on me, right? And I come from a background where, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of confidence in myself initially. And then, you know, we came from a very poverty stricken area. And my mom, she had like six jobs, okay? And then, yeah, six, like seriously, I am not over exaggerating. As a matter of fact, I remember being probably 13 or 14, and she's going to kill me for this, but I remember being 13 and 14 and her sneaking me into, at the time, Buckhead, Atlanta was really popular. It was really, really, really like popping. Okay. That's the best word I could even say.
And okay. It's like one of the more affluent areas of Atlanta. It always has been. It's got this vivacious vibe to it.
Party, party, party. But you had to be at least 18 in some places and at least 21 in others. Well, I was 13, 14 years old. And my mother was a bathroom attendant. That was one of the many hats that she wore. And I remember sneaking in and, you know, her, you know, kind of having her connection and being that bathroom attendant with her, serving people with a smile, helping individuals out, you know, passing out mints and, you know, giving them paper towels, you know, to wipe their hands and things like that. And my mom always said, you do it with pride. You do it with pride. She taught me code switching when I didn't know what code switching was. And I stayed professional until one lady came to me. She said, listen, sweetheart, you're beautiful. I hope that this isn't the only thing that you're going to be doing. They don't have tact, right? Some people just don't know how to say you're going to be great one day.
This is just the start. She went straight to it.
She's like, look, I hope that this is not your end. You're beautiful. You need to do something amazing. and so I always think about that because that was my beginnings. And then my mom, she worked all those jobs. She had four kids. She was a single parent. She mm-hmm. worked all of these jobs so that she could start her own business that she eventually started. And it began to get popular and popular to the point where we were able to move out of the hood into a better
out
area.
Out of the ghetto, right?
Out of the ghetto into a better area, like a better zip code, a better school, a better everything. And so we didn't live in like this big luxurious home, but it was not a one bedroom apartment that we all were like packed up on, right? Mm-hmm. We had our own rooms. We thought we were the Jeffersons.
Made it.
I mean, come on. We thought we were the Jeffersons at this point. Like, what? We're moving on up. Listen, we seriously, it was a small house with multiple bedrooms, and we had been used to everybody squeezing in one room. Okay. And so, and when my cousins came in to live with us, it was six of us in the bedroom. Okay. So that's how tight it was for us. And so, but her business helped us do that. And I saw that and that kind of inspired me, but it just dropped the seed. It didn't do much for me. I still went and pursued, like I said, the casting and the modeling and the acting and all of that stuff, because people just kind of said, that's where you should be. But I ended up really liking the behind the scenes, the management piece of it, the putting things together of it, right?
This person goes here, this person goes there.
Yes. Yes, I wanted to run the show. I didn't want to be in front of the camera all the time. I wanted to run the show. So I did that. I went through a lot of just ups and downs because of the fact that I did not know my identity quite yet. I just knew I wanted to do something. So that made money a challenge. Sleeping in cars. I mean, that was something that was real for me. I remember sleeping in my aunt's, living with my aunt in her home with her family, living in like a little upstairs room, cause I didn't have my own and I was still young. I was really young, but it was still the point that I was a college dropout because I was like, I don't want to go to college. I want to go make money, And that was my mindset because of coming from poverty. We think the answer is money and that's not really that's not the case, right? I think eventually, and by then, just so you know, I was moving everywhere. I was in New York and New Jersey and all of these really great places. And eventually I came back home. And when I came home, I was like, okay, I'm going to get a real job. Because at this point, I'm doing modeling stuff, casting stuff, it's not stable enough and not glamorous whatsoever. So I eventually say, I'm going to get a real job. I'm going to go home back to Atlanta. I come to Atlanta. Apple One Staffing Agency is the one that picks up my resume. I put my resume out. They pick it up. I had a gift of putting resumes together. I don't know how I got it, but I just had it. And so I put a really glamorous resume together with all the wonderful things that I had done and traveled and blah, blah, blah. So they were like, oh my gosh, she's a movie star. She's coming here. and that's really how they treated me. It was a really great experience. But as I came for an executive assistant role because I felt like that was a good place for me to start. I have no college education. I only went to college for a couple of years and I dropped out. This is a good start for me. Mm-hmm. So,
and those for the listeners, Apple One is one of the larger staffing companies in the country. Yes. So you got your footing in at the big boys, at the big girls. We'll say that today.
I did. They were going to place me at a really popular company as an executive assistant. Okay. Right. And so I was excited about that. So I came in, I did a second interview and the account executive, she looks at me and she's like, you can get this job. You can easily do this executive assistant position, but you're made to be here. I think you belong here with us. You need to be here. And I was like, okay, well, how much does it pay? And she's like, well, you have to start from the bottom. And so now people don't understand back in the day, it was hard to get into recruiting. If you didn't know the right people, if you were not connected properly, if you didn't have the right knowledge or whatever, you couldn't just walk into the door and be a recruiter. So I had to start from the bottom. I was making coffee. Okay. I was coordinating interviews. I was calling people back. I was doing payroll on top of all of that. for hundreds of people. I had never done payroll a day in my life, okay? And I was doing all of this stuff. And, you know, eventually I got to a point where I was like, I want to move up. I want to do some, I want to be a recruiter. I don't want to be a recruiting coordinator, you know? I'm sick of getting y'all's coffee, okay? that's kind of how it went. And so I got a mentor. Because one thing about developing and transforming into the version of yourself that succeeds to that next level, people that are around you that helped you up like they did, they tend to only see you at that place.
Right. That's right.
It is very hard for them to see, oh yeah, you could be a recruiter.
And how critical that is, right? That you're bringing that up on International Women's Day. I think one thing that we can all take away from that is that recruiting and staffing, for me, it's felt like an industry that has historically not lifted women up or lifted their female counterparts up, right? Mm-hmm. So what's that one takeaway? And that's directly tied to your experience, right?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. It was, we already were a female dominant establishment. Number one, Janice Bryant was one of the co-founders. She's a woman of color who is a part ownership of Apple One.
Wow.
And so I think that had a lot to do with our, with Apple One looking different than other companies. And that's what made me really attracted to them. I saw women making moves. The branch manager was a female and she was a woman of color. And so that's made me just say, wow, yes,
I can do that. I can be Janice one day.
I can do that. Yeah, I can do that. And so, but they saw me as bubbly, fun coordinator. Okay. And I was like, I'm ready to be a recruiter. Okay. And they were like, no. And so I got a mentor. I took some training. I invested in some training. I got a mentor, all of the things. I did all of the things. I tried to knock on doors secretly. They were like, sweetheart, you're a coordinator. stay in your lane. and that's kind of how that happened. What ended up taking place was I remember getting a position. I got in front of, it was a telecom company. I got in front of the director of talent acquisition. And he goes, hey, you know, basically he was like, hey, you're the fourth interview, this fifth interview this week or something like that. He was just like, just tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, he was just like over it pretty much. I went through a recruiting agency. This is a big no-no. You're not supposed to do this. But against my recruiting agency's advice, I decided to bring my 30, 60, 90-day plan. I decided to go hard. And they were like, initially, I sent it over to the recruiting staff. They were like, you know, that's a little much for the first interview. Let's see if you
test the waters. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to test the waters. And I was like, oh, okay, sure.
They don't need your autobiography yet.
Right. And I was like, uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. I love that. That's awesome.
And so I'll never forget, he was just like, he was blown away. He was like, can you come back tomorrow? He's like, when could you start if you got this position? He's just all in.
How powerful is that you followed your intuition?
I followed what I felt.
Angela. And that confidence that you had in yourself to develop that. And all of that is stemming back from probably the mama that raised you.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
Seeing her. Yeah, for sure. Angela, seeing her be the woman that she developed into, because initially she wasn't that woman either, you know?
Yeah. And I just want to like give a little warning to the listeners. We were talking in advance and I was just so taken aback. I relate to your story on so many levels. Mm-hmm. So be prepared to maybe to let out a little tear here and there when listening to your story, because it touched me and I think it will touch our listeners too.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, there's so many struggles that we as women, forget the color, forget the age, just women that mm-hmm. we endure, that we experience, that we have to be quiet about. And so it's funny that you say I was so confident, because I spent a big majority of my life desiring validation, desiring verification. Can you just verify me? Can you just validate me? Can you just tell me that I'm something,
you know?
And that came from, you know, having a very dark past. Like when I growing up, hey, my mom worked 6 jobs. So what did that mean? She had to leave me with people that she barely even knew. And so abuse came in. I was sexually abused. I was physically abused, emotionally abused. Right. And those that went on for years because of the fact that even in her choice of men, she would settle because she thought, hey, I got all of these kids. I got all these kids. Who would want me? I don't have this, that, or the third. You know, I work 6 jobs. What do I have to offer? You know, but my body, you know? Oh. And so that was really my mindset. My mindset was, I'm not good enough. I'm dirty. I'm not this, I'm not that. So I really didn't have the confidence. I was just a go-getter. I made
hungry.
Yeah, I was just hungry. When you're hungry, listen, when you're
stopping you,
there's no stopping you. And I think about Christopher Gardner, even though he's not female, but I think about his story. I think about Madam C.J. Walker. I think about her story. You know, it's just that hunger for like, I can't go there. I can't go to that life. I can't go to poverty. I can't go to that life ever again in my life. Right. And so I had to do what I had to do. So when I came to this director of talent acquisition, I came ready. I came as if I had the job, and I told, hey, I did research. I audited their career website. Who does that? I said, listen, some of the things that you have here doesn't represent the diversity of, and he's like, take your notes.
I'll take that. Thank you.
Thank you. And so there is where I made my name great. That's what I'll say. I was just able to show and prove. I was able to move really quickly. I went from coming in with the staffing agency as a contractor, making like, I don't know, it was like 19, 20 bucks an hour. And I thought I had made it to him saying, listen, I'm going to cut ties. We're at a point where we can cut ties with the staffing agency, but I want to offer you this, talent acquisition position. And I want to offer you, you know, 6 figures basically. And I was like, say what? And I couldn't even fathom.
Wow.
And so I ended up moving to Buckhead, the place that I had to sneak into. I ended up living there. And
wow. That is amazing.
And I give, like, it was nothing but blessings. It was nothing but, you know, just literally favor and hard work. Right. And so I made my name really, and not me making my name great. It was just the things that I felt that I needed to do help my name be great. So
what was it? Then I got a 2-prong question for you.
Yes. Yeah.
Number one, what was that moment where Monique realized, wait, I need to be my own business? And number 2, what is that advice that you're giving maybe to the female listener, maybe to the female listener of color, maybe to that minority person that is at the big name company and have that inkling, that fire inside of them that says, you know what, I could do this. What is that advice that you would give them? Or maybe even yourself.
Yeah. A couple of years ago. Yeah. So what I would say is to trust your gut. Trust your gut, number 1. In terms of like just giving advice to a female entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur, a small business owner or big business owner, you know, whatever you want to be, trust your gut and pay attention to the things around you. Pay attention to how people see you and pay attention to the people who do see you. There's certain individuals who don't see you clearly. They have you, your identity has not been revealed to them. So they don't know how to move with you. They don't know how to, you know, work with you. But then there's others that see you, like they can see you. And they say, man, you got some amazing skill sets with this. You should really do something with this. You have a gift of gab. You should really, or you have a heart for people. Whatever you do, make sure you help people. You listen to the people who see you. And then you watch the breadcrumbs. There's always going to be, in my life, those breadcrumbs, my mom, breadcrumbs, the casting, being pulled in to be a casting director. I was normally the only minority there, and being pulled in to do those types of things. Like, those are the breadcrumbs to help you get to that next level in your life, to just watch how that unfolds, and then trust who you are. Like, your skills and your talent are supposed to be used. They're not supposed to be hidden. And so if you're in a position or a job or whatever right now, and you are not utilizing your full skill set and talent, that's not your end all be all. There's another level. You just have to trust yourself.
And what was that moment then for you?
The moment for me, well, it wasn't a pretty moment, but the moment for me, the moment for me was when I had moved on. The telecom company that I initially worked with, that I had great rapport, it was the most amazing company ever. I mean, seriously. They were acquired. And during the acquisition, management changed. The best leaders in the world, they left the company. Wow. And
kind of like that classic story of M&A nightmare.
Yes, nightmare.
Emphasis on the nightmare.
It was like it went from bright skies and rainbows to now I was walking around sad. And I remember walking around really sad. And Kevin Wolomowski, he was one of my favorite hiring managers. Well, all of them really were. I had some great times there. He came up to me and we were just talking. And I was just like, oh, so, you know, I just kind of voiced my opinion. And I wasn't a complainer, right? I normally didn't do that, but I had had enough. And he told me, he says, you know, change doesn't always feel good, but all good things come from change. He said, so just think about that. He said, oh, you'll get through this. He said, we both will. I was like, this guy is just whatever. Like, he doesn't get it, you know? But it stuck with
me. Young, I know it all.
I know everything. What is he talking about? But it stuck with me, Angela. It really stuck with me. And so as I kind of moved, some of the other leaders, you know, told me about a position for another telecom company that a couple of them had gone to. And I was like, I'm out. Say no more. They didn't even finish the sentence. And I was like, what do I need to do to get over? And they were like, well, we've already told them about you and, you know, whatever. So anywho, I got the offer there. I was a talent acquisition manager there. I did not stay long because they ended up outsourcing the entire recruiting division to save money.
What a classic tale of a staffing. I mean, honestly, there's so many of these stories that are happening within the industry constantly.
Yeah. And you know, it makes people kind of bitter to outsourcing, but outsourcing has its place, right?
It does.
It definitely has its place. And so,
and it hasn't garnered the best reputation. Let's be serious.
No, it hasn't. But I respect it, and I've used it for various BPOs that I've encountered or partnered with.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, so I get it. You know, during that time, it didn't feel good, and they were like, "Oh, can you train some of them, by the way, because their English is a little." I was like, "Okay." and so, you know, so that was the whole thing. So getting laid off, I remember having a dream that I got fired. And I was like, why would I have a dream? And I have like the best numbers. I'm doing great. You know, like, I'm like, why would I have that dream? Like, and then, yeah. And reality came and it's exactly what happened. And so I remember sitting in my table and I just started to cry. And I didn't know. I at that point I felt like rejected. And I felt like worthless. And I felt like if I was really good, like people say, they would want to keep me, right? Like, you know, and I just started questioning my gifts, questioning who I was. And that lasted, you know, for a little while. And
it was a slump.
And I'm sitting here in this expensive Buckhead townhouse. And all I'm thinking about
is, the 6 figures are gone.
Right. All I'm thinking about is, what am I going to do? My goodness. How is this going to work for me? And I said, well, you know what? one of the VPs at the company that I had mentioned before that I really, really loved, the first telecom company, was like, hey, you know, you should get into, you know, doing some recruiting. I have this partner who's looking for blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, okay. You know, and I just was thinking, I got the training. I understand it. I've been doing this now for a couple of years now. Maybe I could. And so that's how it was birthed initially. The first version, I call it the first version of Fresh Talent Sources, was birthed literally out of a place of depression and feeling like, you know what? Where else can I go? I'm all the way down here. So I can't go any further down. So why not start an agency myself? Why not just try it? My mom's done it before, you know, she started a business. Why can't I do it? And that's literally where it was birthed from. It took a lot. It was very challenging. I'd never started a business before. I had some very bad clients initially, some that didn't pay me my money. I had to chase them down to get money.
I think like whenever we first, you know, had our pre-session, you know, we were talking about what advice would you give that person, you know, aside from the female entrepreneur, but that person that's starting a business in this industry, in staffing specifically. What did you say? It was like, get a lawyer.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Know your paperwork, know your paperwork, understand contracts. And then on top of that, have a lawyer. Like, don't just
sign off on anything.
Yeah. Don't just willy nilly. Like, yeah, I got the contract. No,
maybe 7 pages with the MSP and you guys are charging me blah, blah, blah. Right. Yeah.
Get a lawyer. Invest in a part-time lawyer, freelance lawyer, whatever kind of lawyer you can get to take a look at the contract for you. Because that was my biggest struggle in the beginning. People not taking me as serious. You know, they loved the results, but I was super nice. Like I was like the epitome or whatever the opposite is of a businesswoman in their opinion. You get what I'm saying?
Order taker, right?
Yes, I was an order taker. I was a glorified office manager of some sort. Like because I came in like, hi guys, I'm so excited to be here. Like it was an honor for me to serve you, but yeah, it is an honor in a certain aspect, but at the same time, I'm bringing you a different flow. I'm bringing you something different to the table. I'm not coming like a typical resume pusher recruiter. I'm really digging in. This is a consultation and I'm treating it as such. I just have a personality at that time that I would show my personality as being extremely, you know, just bubbly and all of that good stuff. And now I've definitely changed. I'm still who I am, but I say that my compassion is still there, but I don't always allow my clients to see that really, you know, other side of me where in past times I was just very open and vulnerable.
Right. Okay. So then let's fast forward. We're now here. It's the modern day landscape. The pandemic has caused, I don't even know, the world of staffing to go upside down. You guys specialize in IT, and I think you guys specialize in a couple of different verticals.
Yeah.
How are y'all managing what's top of mind for every single executive right now, and that is talent. Mm-hmm. We know that the world of talent is evolving. We know that there is not enough supply for the demand, particularly in some of the niches that y'all are searching for. And we know that we're going through this renaissance, I guess, if you want to call it. The number of sole proprietorships that were filed has been the highest that they have been ever in the history of recording. We have the great resignation that's happening. 3.5% of the workforce is resigning consistently month after month for a year now. Mm-hmm. And many people are calling it the great awakening. So how are you guys managing these interesting times of talent?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, I feel like we're doing what we've always done, but gone harder. You know what I mean? And I say that to say, like, we've always, for me, I love data. I love science. I've always made sure that in my company, that was really, really prevalent and relevant. Like we have data, we have science, and now AI, right? And so including those three things inside of our business, I believe, is what has helped us tremendously, not only find the right talent, but also to retain the right talent, right? Because you can go to an RPO, a typical, because we do RPO, we do sourcing, we do recruiting, and then we also train talent acquisitions teams on how to work better together, right? And so with all of those things that we do, I think that the piece that we add in with AI and understanding that data science, it's stupendous in how we come across and how we identify our talent more swiftly, more quickly, and then we retain them or help them stay retained. And so our model is a little differently. We don't just like find the people, push the papers to you, and then say, there you go, you know, have fun.
Y'all aren't sourcing. Y'all are taking us to another level and developing those relationships.
We're developing the relationship. If I can tell anyone, and of course, you know, they would essentially be my competitors, but I would say this is enough out here for everybody. If I gave anyone advice that wanted to get into a recruiting agency or a search firm, it would be to follow up as well. Follow up. And from the talent side, not the client side, from the talent side of things, you want to keep following up. If you reach out to a talent and for whatever reason they don't respond, you keep reaching out to them until they tell you to stop. You add them to your list of people to reach out to. You know, you create that data. You create who responded, what their specialties are, what their skills are, and you stay connected. You stay connected and follow up. Now, on the other side of that, once they do come on board once they do give you the chance to tell them about one of your really great opportunities, you want to make sure that you have spoken to the client in such a way that you understand that business goal. You understand the results that this person or this team is going to yield for the client, so that you're able to educate or intelligently or articulate whatever that is, you know, and in such a way that'll be attractive to that talent to make them be like, oh, they need me for this, that I can do that, you know, or, you know, whatever the end all business goal is. And so those are the types of things that we, you know, do. I feel like we're so more consulting than anything.
Oh, 100%.
In every way possible, but we love sourcing. Like, I have some of the best sourcers. I have some of the best lead recruiters, I feel like, and we're a small boutique firm and we make big things happen.
That's right. That's right. So, and it's so powerful what you're saying. And now let's take it to the other side. What is that consulting that you're giving to your clients to help manage and mitigate this talent sphere that we're in? What is that advice that's saying, hey, this is the market, this is how you capitalize on it, this is what you can do to improve your processes to make sure that we're getting the right talent your way?
Well, first of all, we have to understand who we're talking to, okay? So if I have a client that comes in and they're like, hey, you know, I really need some UX designers. We need about 10 for this initiative that we're about to do for this blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, let's figure this out. What are we looking for? Who is the person? Who is the snapshot of that particular person that we're looking for? You know, what motivates them? What drives them, right? What would you need for them to be perceived as? What comes naturally to these individuals? So first off, we're making a persona. We're creating a persona. And so our company uses some cognitive data along with some behavioral science. And that's how we, you know, come along with, we create somewhat of a blueprint for that that client, so that they could see. So look, this is what you want. You want someone who's a little bit more collaborative than independent, a little bit more sociable than reserved, a lot more driven than just steady, maybe someone who's more precise than they are flexible. You know, so we create this whole behavioral pattern for them. And then that's our guy, our girl. You know, that's who we're looking for. And that's the first part of, I think, any healthy relationship, knowing your audience. And also when you know your audience, you know where they hang out. Okay. There's certain people that don't hang out in Reddit. Some people do. Some folks don't hang out at Stack Overflow. Certain tech people do.
That's so interesting how granular you guys are taking this.
Oh, yeah.
Cognitive behavioral assessment, truly at its core.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I love. I mean, I love that part of it.
Well, perfect. Because this is one of the areas that I wanted to ask you about. And I thought I was fascinated by is by our intro call. Okay. So I was reading Staffing Industry Analysts, top 14 predictions. Number 12 was the extinction of the recruiter. Right. Because of artificial intelligence and automation, many of the processes that the recruiter is doing is going to be wiped away or potentially replaced by technology. And they're going to be more in a client-facing, candidate-facing type of role. All that to say is I really think that what they're trying to say is technology is going to enhance that process for them. How do you think that you guys have applied it with your team? I mean, you've touched on a little bit of that point. And what do you think of that statement in general?
Yeah. So let me just say this. For me, AI is about saving time.
Yeah.
It's about improving.
It's not this monster that's going to wipe away an industry.
Absolutely not. I embrace it 100%. One of the companies that we are, my baby company, I call it, it's called Talent to Go. And that's what we a big portion of what we do there is driven off AI. We help really small startups who can't afford like my RPO stuff, right? But they can afford a freelancer or they can afford a project-based person to help them with scaling or growing their company or whatever they're doing, right? So they hire this person freelance, but they still need to know the type of person that they're, you know, connecting with. So we have an AI integration that helps them pick the right fit. And so it automatically does that. As soon as they click the person's name, they get to see all of these behavioral attributes, all of this information about the person. And it helps them to make a conscious decision. Is this the kind of personality that I want to work with? Do they have the right skill sets, the behavior patterns that we're looking for, right? So it does it automatically for them. We don't have to do, like, it's not very consultative. It's more like kind of a la carte. You do it on your own, click a button, and you pay the person your hourly or whatever your project-based fee is, okay? So that is saving time.
Wow.
Creating a better experience for the talent as well as for the client, and optimizing recruiting offers and all sorts of things. I use it for screening candidates. Sourcing candidates is so vital. It's a part of the recruiting process. But who wants to spend 30 hours back in the day, we used to spend 30 hours. Now, wow, with AI, you better not dare tell me. You better not tell me that you are spending 30 hours on sourcing alone. That is
amazing. I love that. Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. So
make sure we highlight that part of the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. So leveraging AI and machine learning technology is it gives recruiters the ability to really automate the process of manually sourcing and being able to screen resumes via like keyword-based type of, you know, searches, narrowing down the candidate pools. I mean, there's no machine that can give you that gut feeling, right? There's not a machine that can discern if this person is telling the truth or this person is telling lies. A talent or a candidate can talk to a machine and lie to it, can tell the machine and can fix their answers so that, you know, so that they look like they're the right person. But when you talk to a live human, we can identify if you're, you know, telling the truth or not. by asking more in-depth questions or digging deeply into that one question that we ask. So again, AI could never take over that. AI can never be a human at all, right? So it improves your engagement. It helps reduce biases. They're now called Hire Easy. Shout out to Hire Easy. I have been using them for years, and they have some really great ways to kind of avoid unconscious bias, right, with their tools that they use. Right. And so even though that unconscious bias training is, you know, all across the board now, making sure that certain standardized interviews and certain features with an AI powered kind of recruiting solution like Hire Easy can help reduce the whole bias in the interview process to make sure that it's inclusive and it's fair, you know. And so this AI is amazing. I don't see any issues myself with it, maybe because I'm a fan, maybe because I use it at its core. I use it for everything dealing with my recruiting agency. And so, yeah, I absolutely love AI.
That's fantastic. I think you've shared a lot of wealth and wisdom when it comes to the utilization of technology. In fact, with whatever you guys are doing to automate the process and identifying the identification of candidates, and also taking it a step further by eliminating or further reducing the unconscious bias, which we all unfortunately have been ingrained to at least have at some level because of societal nets that have caused this. Mm-hmm. So I want to, before we wrap up today's show, I feel like I could talk to you for hours, by the way.
Let's do it.
God, I'm really sad that we have to, maybe we'll do a part two.
Yeah.
But I want to just take it to a personal level. You know, how being a victim of abuse and speaking openly about it, being from somebody that, you know, you are a woman of color, you are somebody that came from lower income. You know, I relate to that, but what is that advice that you give to somebody that's coming from those situations, that's in the dark moment of their own life? And potentially listening in on today's show to help further make that who they should be and maybe flip the narrative.
Yeah, so that's a good question. I have to really chew on that. So my initial response would be that you are not a victim, you're a victor. Okay. And that you're still here, you know, so there's worth in you. You're still here. So there's purpose in you. You know, you're still breathing. You're still able to move around. And so that would be the first part that I would want them to just kind of feel and understand that they still mean something, right? And it's not, and that anything that happened has absolutely nothing to do with them. I speak about it on purpose because of the fact that the almost demonized person who is doing this really horrendous, you know, act, their goal is to muzzle your mouth. Their goal is to quiet you, to intimidate you, to make you scared, to make you doubt yourself. And so the best thing that you can do is live out loud. Mm-hmm. The best thing you can do is speak when people tell you don't speak. Yell when people tell you don't. Laugh out loud. Be your original, authentic self. Listen, I show up this way because this is me. I don't go into the whole corporate how I should look this way, that way, or the third. This is me. Take it or leave it, right? Sometimes my hair weave is long. Sometimes it's natural, okay? That is who I am, okay?
Love it.
Be apologetically yourself, right? And love yourself and don't doubt yourself. Don't doubt your gut. Don't doubt who you are. And really walk powerfully without holding on to the past. And that's another thing that that's a whole nother like conversation, but really in terms of individuals that are victors who have overcome this type of abuse, they tend to hold on to the memories. And I'm telling you today that the only way that I was able to really matriculate through life and kind of go through, you know, what I went through and still stand strong was the simple fact of letting it go. The simple fact of saying, whatever went on, that is not who I am. That's not my identity. It's a part of my experience and my journey, but that's not my identity, right? I'm a survivor. I am a female founder. I am a mother. I am a wife. You know, I am a whole bunch of other things, but that whole victimized thing there, that pitifulness, no, I am powerful. I want you to choose power instead of pity and not dwell on it. And so it's funny because I heard someone tell that this same thing that I'm saying. And I was so filled with bitterness at one time in my life and resentment of what happened to me that I thought, this lady must be crazy to say, forget about it. She must be out of her mind to say, forgive and forget. Is she insane? Did this really happen to her? But I realize now that that has always been my key to success, is literally not holding on this whole baggage, because that baggage will make you suspicious of good people, skeptical of great opportunities. That baggage will make you have a delusional perception on your life and where you really are in life. So let it go. Be a victor, not a victim, and be powerful instead of pitiful. That's it.
That is absolutely amazing. And I'm walking away with more than just the insight and the time that you've shared, but you know, just absolutely powerful takeaways that I think our audience and myself included can learn from. So Monique, infinitely thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for spending some moments of that with us and really sharing some wisdom, some ways that women on this International Women's Day, victors of abuse, future entrepreneurs, staffing industry professionals can really learn from. And just one final thing, where can we find you? Where do we find Monique Davis? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Listen, don't call me, I'll call you. No, I'm just kidding. I am very easily accessible. I am on LinkedIn 24/7. So if you are on LinkedIn, you will definitely see my face, okay? I also love or enjoy now. I used to have a very weird relationship with Clubhouse, and now I'm always on there. And good. So I'm on Clubhouse as well under Monique Davis. Actually, you can go to Intentional Recruiters Changing the World. And that's the name of our group. We have over 900 members, 900 wow. recruiters in that Clubhouse group. And so we'd love to have you, even if you're not a recruiter, you're just a recruiter, intentional recruiter ally, because there's a difference between a recruiter and an intentional recruiter. Okay. So you can go there. You can go to my website. If you're a talent, you're looking for anything in HR, marketing, or IT, come to me, okay? ftsources.com is our website that you can check out. And like I said, I'm very responsive on LinkedIn. If I don't get with you within the day, within 24 to 48 hours, you can expect to hear back from me. I don't mind giving out advice. I don't mind helping others. But you know, we just have to schedule it accordingly. But other than that,
my life is kind of crazy.
Right. Other than that, I'm happy to help. I'm happy to answer questions. I don't see other recruiters as a, competition. As a matter of fact, I have trained some of the best that have gone on to Google and have gone on to, you know, airline companies and have gone on to do some great things. So I love being a mentor in the recruiting space.
Well, having you as a mentor would be certainly something powerful to be the stepping stone for anyone in their career. And thank you for that. We'll definitely maybe link some of the ways that we can find you. Absolutely. Thank you to our listeners for tuning into today's episode. Monique, thank you once again for spending some time. I'm going to find you. We're going to do another one because this has been absolutely wonderful. Really one of the more engaging and powerful sessions that I've had to be a part of. So it's been a privilege. And we will see you guys on the next episode. Thank you all for joining us.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.